Okay, so Mark chapter 6, one of the best known, Mark chapter 6, one of the best known miracles, I suppose, the feeding of the 5,000. I'm not really going to go into the miracle itself, but I began rereading Mark this last week. It's all action, it's all go. And it's interesting as you read the Gospels that the eyewitnesses, very, very few of them ever denied the miracles. Those who were there, they didn't like the fact that Jesus had done them, and they accused him of using sorcery, satanic sorcery or demonic magic, or doing it via Beelzebub, but they didn't deny the miracles. And we have to wait really till about the 18th century, people like David Hume coming along and casting doubt on the miracles themselves by saying some things like, well, miracles can't happen, therefore they don't, that kind of thing. And then the following century, the 19th, the liberal theology basically tried to rewrite the Bible, leaving out anything that was vaguely supernatural or miraculous. But my point is that the people who were there, they knew that something astonishing had happened. They may not have all liked the fact that Jesus was performing miracles, but they didn't tend to deny it. But my text is in verse 34 of Mark 6, where Jesus looks at the crowds and says, look at them. And he had compassion on them because they're like sheep without a shepherd, aimless. I suppose the aim for most people, certainly many people, if not most today, would be to get to a point in their life where they don't have to do anything they don't want to, and they can choose any day to do exactly what they really want to do. As somebody said many years ago, the aim of people these days, modern people, was to earn more, work less, retire sooner. Now, in the mid-19th century, William Booth was converted, and he immediately was on fire, and he formed what's called the Salvation Army. And, you know, the name tells you the aim. That's what it was about. Yes, there was poverty. Yes, there was child neglect. There was alcohol abuse. There was corruption and so on. But their aim was salvation. Unfortunately, all the stuff I have today from the Salvation Army who've kept the name, unfortunately, salvation is not their aim anymore. Now, my title is Ant Mill, because there's army ants and they follow each other nose to tail. But occasionally, they lose the pheromone trail and they can end up that the one at the front has actually hooked his nose onto the tail of the one at the back. And they go into a circle, which is called an ant mill, or sometimes labeled the death spiral. Because what happens now is they frantically go round and round and round in a circle until they die of exhaustion. It's a tragic thing to be aimless. And here is this, our situation for so many people today. They're just aimless, aimless. No leadership. Here's a well-known story, feeding of the 5,000. The scholars, Bible scholars, I mean, now I don't mean people in the world, but most of the Bible scholars deny the miracle. They said, oh, no, no, no. This is the kind of thing they say. No, the numbers were exaggerated. Jesus probably only fed perhaps 20 or 30. Or it was Jesus' opportunity now to try and educate them regarding social action. And so they all shared the little they had. Or those more religious would say, well, it was a kind of religious ceremony. Everybody was given the tiniest, tiniest crumb, and they all felt part of this wonderful religious experience, a bit like communion or whatever. Well, the Bible is clear. This happened. This actually happened exactly as was recorded. And I don't suppose most of us would deny that. But I wonder, would most of us be in this group? Somebody I listened to just this last week. He said, oh, Jesus definitely performed the miracles, 36 miracles in the New Testament. But of course, he doesn't do miracles today. He did miracles then, but he doesn't do miracles anymore. Now, I don't know what you think of that. I disagree with that. I disagree for a number of reasons. Number one, I can't see that Jesus has changed, same yesterday, today, and forever. But also, I've seen miracles, and I would actually argue that I am a miracle. I've changed dramatically. And I haven't been responsible for the change Jesus has done it. When I was converted in 1988, most of my colleagues, and I guess some of the pupils, thought that it was weird and probably unpleasant, a negative experience from their point of view, because I'd become a kind of driven person in one direction. Jesus was my general and I was the foot soldier. And I suppose my one-track thinking clashed with their own egos. I read just this last week in Leviticus 5, where the Lord says, if a person sins, even if he's not aware of it, even if he doesn't acknowledge it or recognize it, if a person sins, they're guilty and they need to sort out that guilt. They need their sin removed. But then it's very interesting that the Lord then lists a couple of sins. And the first one that really hit me, and I hope it'll hit you as well, was if a person sins, and the first sin flagged up was by not speaking up when they should. Now that hits you, doesn't it? Because that's you, isn't it? And that's me. And the next one that really hit me, that was flagged up, was when we make rash promises, careless promises. Oh, don't worry about it, or I'll ring you tomorrow, I'll ring you next week, don't leave it with me, and all those kind of things that we've all done, haven't we? Psalm 78. They forgot what God had done, and so they ended their days in futility. Is that going to be your story? Is that what's going to happen to you? End your days in futility? My text, 6:34, Jesus had compassion because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And I guess from my colleagues of 32 years ago, they preferred me to be without a shepherd. They preferred me to join them in their group of shambling sheep, going nowhere, totally directionless, a pointless existence, because they didn't want a shepherd. Have you got a shepherd? Do you want a shepherd? See, we were all there one time, directionless, weren't you? Now, are you still there, though? Following the crowd, a death spiral like those poor army ants, going nowhere fast. I read an article just last week by a celebrated agnostic, and he'd interviewed three of the leading religious leaders, one Christian, one Muslim, one Jew. But he said this of the Jew, the rabbi. He said to the rabbi straight away, I suppose you're going to try and convert me, are you? Oh, no, I wouldn't dream of it, said the rabbi. You've got enough problems of your own. I was thinking, well, what? It took me back to a Christmas Eve years ago. I was stuck in traffic in the middle of the city centre in Swansea, and there was a vicar on the radio, and the presenter said to him, I suppose you're hoping for some converts tonight in the carol service? Oh, no, said the vicar, that's not what we're about. Well, it is what we're about if we're genuine Christians, but this is what Jesus was about, people being saved, people being converted. So back to my recent agnostic fella writing the article. He was critical about Britain today. We have no leaders, he said. We can't trust the political leaders, and the church leaders have betrayed us because they've covered up all these sex crimes. And so Mark chapter 6 is bang up to date, isn't it? Sheep without a shepherd. Where are you in all this? This is our situation. People live for the weekend, and this is why, you know, people got drunk and people stabbed in Cardiff last night. But people can't wait for the weekend to go out and binge or whatever. They live for the weekend. Their life is pointless otherwise. This is why they're so angry with the lockdown. It spoils their fun. Millions of people gamble on the lottery and online sites. Why? Because they think if they win, they'll be happy. And how much they need to win, which is very unlikely they're going to win at all, but how much do they need to win to be happy? And the answer is just a bit more. It's never quite enough. The morning that Philip Schofield came out, that's the right phrase, on morning TV, on ITV, there were two comments I read by two of his colleagues there, one by his colleague, one by himself, and they thought they were agreeing with each other, but they weren't. Philip Schofield said that he'd come out because it was all about him, really. And then one of his colleagues said, yes, what's important to Philip are his family. I thought, yeah, and you're saying that as if you agree with what he said, but you're saying different things. As Jesus surveyed the crowd, and he surveys our society in 2020, what does he see? Sheep without a shepherd. Rudderless people, including our leaders, including the celebrities who write in newspapers and magazines and come on TV. You know, I had a golden opportunity in the 70s when I was teaching. One Friday afternoon, I was dictating a note to a class. I was looking out the window. It was a lovely summer's day. And my mind, I was able to do two things at once. I was able to dictate this note while thinking about something else. And I was thinking, what should I do tonight? Have a game of tennis, go for a few pints with the boys, try and find some girl to go out with or whatever. And the three words came to me, what's the point? I had an opportunity there. I actually said it out loud without thinking in front of the class. You must have thought I'd gone mad. What's the point? I had an opportunity, but I blew it. I missed it. Then some years later, when I was 30, my grandfather was slowly dying. It took 2 weeks. He was in the hospital just across the road. I spent a long time with him. But I kept asking myself then, what's the point? But again, I asked myself the question, but I didn't go looking for an answer, you see. I was sheep without a shepherd. Nobody on their deathbed wishes, oh, I wish I'd spent more time in work making money. I watched a video just the other day, a kind of montage of people who had, celebrities who had died last year. Chilling, man. Where are they gone? All those people, famous names, names I grew up with, you know, where have they gone? Were they all sheep without a shepherd? I don't know. There was a nun some years ago, old. She was teaching in a prestigious school in Ireland, and she came across a little booklet on John chapter 3, tiny little booklet. And the title of the booklet, I think, was From Religion to Christ. She read the booklet. She was a deeply religious woman all her life. She read the booklet, and eventually she was converted to Christ. She was changed. She'd followed what the priest said all those years. She'd never even read John's Gospel for herself. And her mind was just opened, her eyes were opened. And she was just born again, and she knew it. She was thrilled. But she was horrified she'd wasted her life. Now, some of you might think, oh, that's a bit extreme. She didn't waste her life. But when you stand before the judgment seat of Christ on the last day, you will know what it is to waste your life. So this dear lady now, who's become a Christian in her early 60s, she invites the Gideons to come into the Catholic school. You know, she had uproar from the parents and the staff. How dare you? What are you doing? You see, they did not want the truth. They didn't want somebody to come in and give the New Testament out. Even though there was a Catholic school, they say they believe the Bible. We don't want this, they said. But she stood her ground. Why did she stand her ground? Because she knew she'd been a sheep without a shepherd. But now she'd found him, or rather, wonderfully, he'd found her. What about you? You know, in the opening verses of Mark 6 before the reading today, Jesus is amazed at something. He's amazed at their lack of faith. You know why? Because the evidence is overwhelming. What about you? You're still aimless? You're going to die like that? A pointless life? Just fizzling out? Or are you going to turn to the Good Shepherd, Jesus Christ? Amen. We're going to